everybody. Welcome to Theater Schmooze, where we chat with Jewish theater makers from around the world about their art, Judaism, and vision for theater's future. I'm your host, Danielle Levski. This podcast is brought to you by the Alliance for Jewish Theater, a nonprofit organization made up of theater artists, theaters, and other people connected to theater to promote the creation, presentation, and preservation of both traditional and non-traditional theatrical endeavors by, for, and about the Jewish experience. Today, we'll be talking with Yehuda Hyman, who is a theater maker of many hats, actor, playwright, dancer, and choreographer, and who is based in Brooklyn, New York. It is such an honor to have you as a guest on our show today, Yehuda.
Thank you, Danielle. I'm honored to be here.
Thanks. We had a little kerfuffle at our last podcast recording, so glad to be joining you again, and actually in Brooklyn. That's very cool. We're recording live from Brooklyn. I want to start by talking about your solo show, The Dancing Room.
Okay.
It was just featured in the Yiddish Arts and Academics Association of North America in San Diego. So for our listeners who might be new to this piece, this show is a theatrical tale of Yehuda's own life, from growing up the child of immigrant parents to an obsession in his teen years with the ballet dancer Vaslav Nijinsky and his initiation into the world of Hasidic dance. I would love to learn a little bit more about your connections, Yehuda, between the studies of this Polish dancer you loved so much and then your introduction to Jewish ritual dance. How do those connect?
Okay, that's a great question. So when I was 16, I started studying ballet at 15, and I immediately became obsessed with Vaslav Nijinsky, who was considered the greatest male dancer, certainly of the 20th century, and probably still. He's a legend. He died, I think, I'm not sure, in the 40s or 50s. So I had read his biography. There's only photographs. There's no film. He really stopped dancing. Gosh, don't quote me. I think before World War I, even. And he had this amazing jump. He could jump in the air and just stay there and take a breath and then continue going up and off stage. It's a legendary thing it's written about.
Wow.
So that's what I wanted. This little chubby guy from LA. I wanted to dance like him, but there wasn't much lift off for me. But I love ballet, and I received scholarships to very well-known ballet conservatories, like the New York City Ballet School of American Ballet. All right, so there's this image in my mind of this ability to levitate, and also Nijinsky's most favorite role was in Spectre de la Rose. He actually played a rose, and he flew through the air as a rose. Also, he was very trans. If you see the photos of him, he's in full makeup and wearing a leotard covered with roses. And this little queer Jewish boy growing up in West LA, that spoke to me. So I thought, wow, that's what I want to be. And now we cut to like almost 50 years later. And I'm interested in a different kind of rose. Embodying it and dancing is a different kind of rose. And that is the rose that is in the opening text of the Zohar, the mystical rose of Judaism. And I'm also interested in levitation and the body, how the body can rise and fly, but from a spiritual aspect, more than the physical ability to jump very high and stop in the air. Does that answer your question?
It does. Yeah. What a gorgeous connection between this performer, dancer that you admired and wanted to embody so much to actually the body, where your body comes from, the ancestral body and the rose of Jewish spirituality. That's a gorgeous connection. That's so
Thank you so
beautiful.
Much. And thank you for using the word ancestral. I feel like where I am now is really channeling my ancient roots, the roots of my people. That's where I am now.
Yeah. 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 And you know, I think we can see that from the body of your work in the past and in the present with the Dancing Room, with Mar Vista, with Mad Dancers. You explore so much of the story of your family, of your trajectory, of your ancestry. And I even saw in your artist statement, you wrote from one of your plays that most of your plays originate in the movement of the body.
Yes, so absolutely.
I guess my next question would be, what is your personal connection to the moving body as a dancer, as a child of immigrants, as someone that carries ancestry through the stories that you create?
Okay, so I grew up in LA. I'm first generation American. My father was from Poland, my mother from Russia. And there was always dancing in my house, particularly at first with my mother. She grew up in the mountains of Russia. She was completely uninhibited. You could put on any kind of music and she would immediately start dancing around the living room. And this is a very early memory, like almost probably from the womb, dancing around the house with my mother, my brother, sister, without inhibition. Going to Cafe Danza was a folk dance place in LA. My mother would schlep me there on the bus when I was a little kid, and we would do what we called Israeli folk dance, Greek dance. I just grew up like that's what you do. The music's good, you dance. So that's my mother's side. And that was primarily like Russian, Greek, whatever dances. My father did not dance at all. My father was the only, just to let it be known, he was the, he escaped from Poland in 38. Mm. He was the only member of his family to get out. He lost his entire family. Mm. I didn't know any of this until the 80s after he died. It was just not spoken about. But there is a very potent memory of when I'm about 12, when he taught me a fragment of a little Hasidic dance that he remembered from Poland, that the Hasids did, that he watched, that he witnessed. Mm. It was a one-time only thing. That was the one time he danced, he showed me, and that was it. And that was a door that he opened for me that led to probably the last 25 years of my work. Where did that dance come from? Yeah, so it was there always on both sides. The body dances, the body celebrates through dance, the body feels alive through dance. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been an integral part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it makes sense that in your theatrical trajectory, you did return to dance after shifting mm-hmm. your focus to writing for about mm-hmm. 10 years. Do you think that's because of this connection to your family, or is it to something else? What made you return to dance, to movement?
Mm, you see.
To integrate it.
Yeah. It's unavoidable. Yeah, I found there's so much about self-identity and in the theater, like, who are you? People always are asking, you know, what's your statement? Who are you? What are you?
Yeah.
And first, you know, defining yourself. Are you a dancer? Are you a choreographer? Are you an actor? What's your name? I had many names. I went through a lot of name changes. Anyway, at a certain point, I became very burnt out with being a choreographer in the dance world. Mm. The way, and I'm not anti the commercial theater world. I was very much a part of that in my early career. But there are certain restrictions in that world about what you are asked to do. So I left it. I was just burnt out. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's not who I am anymore. And I'm going to write. And mm-hmm. I moved away from it for about 15 years. I really
15,
didn't dance.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is, you know, kind of dangerous for a dancer. you can imagine. So what happened was when my beloved mother died at age 92, I just sort of shut down. And there were a lot of reasons, the whole everything I was doing. And I just couldn't write. I didn't know what I was doing. I ended up in Spain. Luckily, I was in an artist residence. It's a crazy story. And mm-hmm. while I was there, I encountered flamenco dance, which I had loved when I was about 16. And that just seeing those dancers, that passion, that expression in the body, that energy, emotion, I went, oh, it kind of saved me. It lifted me out of my depression.
Wow.
I started taking classes in Spain, you know, not with any thought that I was going to do this, just that it was the only thing that made me feel good.
Mm.
And that was around 2008. Mm-hmm. And that was my reentry into dancing. And it was crazy. Then I'd never been to college. I went quickly, did my undergrad, and then got my master's in dance because I'm insane. Wow. At age 55 at Sarah Lawrence College, because I realized I knew, like, this is really crazy, but this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I want to do this. And it wasn't like I was denying everything else, my writing, my acting, but I just knew, for what it's worth, I need to dance.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Why do you think it's crazy that you went back to school?
Well, I don't think it's crazy that I went back to school. That was actually really smart because I needed, to be honest, I wanted to teach, and I wanted to teach at a, I wanted to teach really in conservatories. I wanted to teach people who were interested in the theater. Mm-hmm. And in order to get those jobs, I had to have what's called a terminal degree.
Uh-huh.
You just can't, you know, that's, as we say, tuchasam tish, I'm putting it on the table. That's what those are the facts. You know?
Right.
So I did that, but the idea that I was going to do it in dance was, you know, I was certainly the oldest person around on campus and at Sarah Lawrence College and in my MFA program. But I did it. There were many injuries along the way because I had to figure out, how does one dance in your 50s after really not having danced for 15 years? And how do you work through those injuries? And so that's part of it.
I would love to learn a little bit more about what you were saying earlier with your father and the sort of the buried stories that he had of his family and showing you this little snippet of Hasidic dance.
Mm-hmm.
How did that blossom for you later, learning more about Hasidic dance, learning more about ritualistic dance, and how is it appearing in your work nowadays?
Okay. So that's a big story.
Good.
I don't know. Everything is a big story now because it's just been so many years. So what happened was, I didn't think really about that moment with my father until, I don't know, 30, 40 years later. But I had a pretty solid career as a professional choreographer, working in mostly theater, mostly in LA at the Taper and places like that. Mm-hmm. I was hired to choreograph a play called Ghetto by the Israeli playwright Joshua Sobol. It was the American premiere. Gordon Davidson, great late founder of the Center Theater Group, hired me. It was my first big gig. Mm-hmm. And I was in a rehearsal room with 30 actors looking at me, waiting for the steps to do Jewish dance. I also have to say, I was hired at the last minute. I had no prep time at all. I was hired a week before the show began. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So I was freaked out and stressed, and the actors were not into what I was doing and were rebelling. And all of a sudden, this is a kind of a long story, but this is the whole thing. This is where it all begins. And this is around 1985. At the door appears Giora Feidman. Giora Feidman is a renowned musician, klezmer artist, clarinetist, Bessarabian Argentinian Jew. So that's a lot of chutzpah right there. So he's in the show. He's been hired as a special guest artist. He comes with an incredible resume, Israeli Philharmonic, blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
So I'm trying to choreograph these actors, and it's just not going well. And there's a lot of tension in the room. And he appears at the door, and he just kind of waves me over. Mm-hmm. And he's standing there with his clarinet, and he says, "Listen, I play, you dance." So he wanted me to just stop the rehearsal, and he would play his clarinet, and I would improvise. And I was completely drowning at that moment, and I had no choice. So I thought, okay. So I closed my eyes, and he played his clarinet. Now, Giora, it's soul music. It's pure soul music, what he's playing. And something within me just erupted. That's the only way I can say. In front of, like, there were actually 40, 45 people in the room. It was at the Mark Taper Forum Rehearsal Studios, and Gordon was watching.
Wow.
And I went into some kind of, not a trance, but I just connected to that Jewish ethos, to that gestalt, to that spirit in my body. And I just was moving for, I don't know, a very long time, mostly with my eyes closed. And when I opened my eyes, everyone was looking at me like, who is this? who is this person? And yes, he understands something about Jewish dance. And yes, we will let him lead us. So that was the beginning. And it was a long, many, many chapters after that, many experiences. And it wasn't, you know, I want to be clear, it wasn't like, oh, I'm a chassid or I'm this. I'm just connecting to something very ancient or generational, something in my body that's connected to my tribe, you know?
Yeah.
It was so real and so true.
Wow. That's an incredible story. Mm-hmm. I think the best moments of clarity come out of that kind of chaos, though. But there needs to be this chaotic energy established to find the calm again. So I think
that often happens in the theater, you know. And also I can speak as an actor. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just have to go to this place where you don't know what the F you're doing.
Yep.
And then in that nothingness, something can emerge. Because what's happening is you're being forced to lose all preconceptions, everything you were holding on to in order to create something, in order for something new to emerge. It's not always comfortable. And you try not to lash out at people.
Yeah.
but sometimes it happens that way. Yeah. I think that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you followed a similar process for some of your more current pieces that you've been working on? Like, for instance, The Dancing Room or other ones. What was the process like for those?
Oh, yeah. Well, because now I've been doing this so long time, so there's always this discomfort.
Uh-huh.
When you don't, but now I just sort of know, okay, this is uncomfortable right now. You know, need to freak out. Just, this is part of the process. So I just kind of keep going and allow myself to feel inept. And I'm working with an ensemble of six very gifted young dancer actors. And so I feel very fortunate that they're along for the ride. And there's not the expectation that there's going to be immediate result. Mm. It's a process that we're going to go through because it really has to do with these particular people working together in the room, all of us working together in the room, and it's going to take as long as it takes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love the exploration, and I think they're into the exploration. And it's faith. It's like a lot of faith that it's going to eventually make sense. And it does usually. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is like a devising process that you have then with your dancers.
It is devising. Yes. Mm-hmm. It is very much ensemble work. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm there, I'm guiding, I'm really interested in what is going to emerge from them.
Yeah.
And so it takes time. It takes time and it takes love. And it takes space and it takes faith, you know?
Yeah.
So now I've been working with this group. I gathered them right before COVID began. We were in rehearsal for 2 months. Then we got shut down. Then we did Zoom for a while. And then we worked outside on Governor's Island last summer. And now I'm going back into rehearsal with them masked in an inside studio. I've done a lot of work in person masked.
Yeah.
And we're hoping to present this body of work we've been working on for the last 2.5 years in December at the 14th Street Y in Manhattan.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah, we hope. I hope.
is that the Project 2022 that you have?
Yeah. So I don't have a title. So what this project is I came to the understanding I'd spent quite a long time on the Mar Vista. Maybe we can talk about that later. That's a piece about my mother. And now I really wanted to focus on Hasidic tales that are about dancing, because there's a whole body of literature about the power of dance, dance as a spiritual levitation, as a body levitation. And that is both the group work that I'm making and also the solo work, which is The Dancing Room. I've been collaborating with them. Michael Labenluft, the director, on that. That's my solo show. And then there's this group work. I will not perform in the group work. I've learned the hard way that's really hard to do, to be in something and be the director person. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in Mar Vista, you were part of it, right? You were.
Yes. And it was really hard to do
that.
Yeah. I don't regret it, but it was just, it's just very difficult, especially, you know, I do very bare bones, low budget things. So there's not assistants and all these things. It's just me and the actors usually for a long time until the very end when we have a stage manager. So I want to be able to be outside and see and, you know, have a clear view. And it's a lot of, like, you feel like it's a very split personality thing to do that. Sure.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I wanted to take a step back more into like a bird's eye view on your career, on the shows that you've been creating. And perhaps we can talk about Mar Vista as part of it. Mm-hmm. How has focusing on your Jewishness, on being Jewish in your work, caused certain perspective shifts or realizations? Because it seems very intentional. Like, all of your work follows stories of your family, stories of your experiences, stories of their experiences.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Danielle, I never start out thinking this is going to be a Jewish thing or I'm going to do the Jew thing or whatever. No, never. Never, ever, ever. It's always it's always something that interests me. It's really honest. And in fact, there was a time when I, you know, I have to say there was a bit of I don't want to be known as the Jewish guy. I don't want, you know, it's too bad now. Like, please, I'm the Jewish guy, whatever. I am. But really, you know, right after Ghetto, which was 84, it's like, you know, they had a Jew show, they'd call me, you know. Like, hey, we're doing the Dybbuk, come on down. Hey, we're doing this. And I was like, I'm okay, you know, if I'm interested, but I'm just me, you know. I have other aspects to my thing. But so the Mad Dancers, which I spent about 20 years on, it's because I had an experience that happened to me in Tzfat in Israel that had to do with Hasidim and Rabbi Nachman. And it just was it's a long story, but that happened. And then because of that, I ended up in Ukraine and all this stuff. And, you know, and Mar Vista, it's just because my mother told me the most incredible tales about her life that I just thought, this is a play. And then going into it, it's also so much about being a Jewish woman and the time she was. And now with the Dancing Room and Project 2022, it's just time to do it. It's just, this is the time to dance and to dance this way. And I'm dancing in the way I know how, and I come from tribe, you know?
That moment in your life when you were feeling like you didn't want to be known as the Jewish dancer, the Jewish choreographer, the Jewish writer, where do you think that was coming from? Why that?
Yeah.
Not the rejection, but like the pushing away of identity.
I think it was a lot of things. First of all, my parents went through so much prejudice. My mother couldn't get a job when they moved to LA. They weren't hiring Jewish nurses. She was a nurse in certain hospitals. They were very worried. They told me, they were very proud of their heritage, but they also said, you don't have to tell everyone you're Jewish. There were anti-Semitic incidents that happened to me when I was a child in school. So that just is there in your life. Like, don't identify, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I was growing up in the early 60s, you know, so there's that. When I started, the first part of my life was I got my Actors Equity card at 17. I was dancing in Broadway shows and I wanted to be one of the cool guys, the cool, you know, how can I say this? Non-Jew, you know, I wanted to be, I don't know, a Shagetz. That's all. I wanted to be a tall, muscular, you know, that was what I wanted. I wanted to work. That was the look that got hired over and over again. You know, 6 foot tall, blonde, muscular, tiny waist guy. And I have a very stumpy Eastern European body. I have, like, you know, thighs and, you know, hips and, you know, so. There, and that was a lot of, like, I kept changing my name. I didn't want to be, you know, have Hyman. I used the name Timothy French for a while when I would go,
really?
Which is hilarious. Oh, yeah, a whole series of names. I was just trying to not, also the whole being gay. I was like, you know, it was just always very gay. So, like, you know, and I had training where they were like trying to tone down my gayness and, you know,
because
that was, So that was, you know, that it's so sad, really. It's so sad, but that was the time. I feel happy now that other young artists don't have to do that. I mean, look at the Tony Awards. It's fabulous. A musical about Black gay men.
Yeah.
One, you know, it's like that. And then I just don't like being pigeonholed. You know, I don't like, I'll be honest, I hate being asked, what is your play about? And what is, I don't know. It's for the audience. I don't like being put in any corner. You know, I just want to make the work, you know? And, but it's undeniable that almost everything I've self-created comes from my background, my kishkas as a Jewish person. You know, it's like, what can you say?
Yeah.
And so at a certain point, I took it as a positive and not a negative. Like, I remember once in my chorus boy days, someone said, oh, you have the map of Israel on your face.
Oh.
And I was so like, ew. And now I go, oh, yeah, isn't
that great?
Beautiful. Isn't that great? You know, isn't that great?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's an honest thing that happened to me over many, many years, you know?
Yeah.
But it's sort of been since the early 90s, I've been feeling this way about myself and my work.
I'm glad you were able to come full circle with it. I think, as you said, the history of being part of any disenfranchised identity group in the U.S. and beyond the U.S. Comes with this internalized rejection, hatred, et cetera. To work through that and move past and be like, this is a part of who I am. This is a part of my story. It's just going to come out in what I do. And that's just what's going to happen. I think it's beautiful that you came to that moment.
Thank you.
Thank you. This was such a beautiful interview. Thank you so much for telling us about yourself, your work, your process, the chaos and the calm, all of it together. So beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you, Danielle. And thank you, to Alliance for Jewish Theater. And I'm very happy to be part of that too. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Theater Schmooze. A special thanks to Danny Debner, our technical producer, Ilya Levinson and Alex Kaufman, the composers of our theme music, Michelle Shapiro, the creator of our logo, and the entire Alliance for Jewish Theater community. This podcast was brought to you by the Alliance for Jewish Theater. If you like what you've heard today, support this podcast and all of our initiatives towards connecting Jewish theater makers by making a tax-deductible donation to Alliance for Jewish Theater at alljewishtheater.org or joining as a member. Make sure to give us a review on iTunes and learn more about us at alljewishtheater.org. I'm your host, Danielle Levski, and I'll chat with you next time. L'chaim.